Our guest today is Abigail Dillon. She's Vice President of Litigation for Climate and Energy at Earth Justice, based in Oakland. Thanks for being with us today in studio.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Judge Kavanaugh has a long record of judicial rulings on what seems like a particular focus on deregulation, including on environmental and climate regulations. So let's just jump right in first with your first impressions of him as the nominee.
Sure. Well, as you say, as a judge on the D.C. Circuit, he's had lots of opportunities to rule on really critical environmental issues, from deadly air pollution to climate change. And his record is, I think, crystal clear that he is very skeptical about the whole enterprise of regulation. And when we say regulation, what we really mean is protection. He has been extremely skeptical of the Obama administration's use of our bedrock statutes from the Clean Water Act to the Clean Air Act to afford us the basic limits on pollution that we expect, as well as taking federal action on climate change when Congress has been unwilling to act.
Let's start right there with rulings on climate change, because he had a pretty critical viewpoint that it is not the something that the federal government can do to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. Can you talk more about that ruling?
Well, he said most recently in a ruling about hydrofluorocarbons that as well-intentioned as efforts to rein in climate change may be, EPA can't do it without congressional authority and very clear congressional authority. Now, the Clean Air Act is a really broad statute. In the 70s, Congress wanted to give EPA the authority to react in real times to the biggest threats we face, to take in the science about what's harming our health, what's harming our environment and now the atmosphere, and to look at and even compel the evolution of technology to put solutions into place. What Judge Kavanaugh has done in a series of opinions is take the most narrow possible reading of the Clean Air Act and suggest that there is no authority to regulate. So he has questioned the premise of Massachusetts v. EPA.
Say more about what that is.
That's the landmark Supreme Court holding that recognized that the words any pollutant in the Clean Air Act, of course, encompassed greenhouse gases. He had the chance to weigh in on an application of that decision. So the Clean Air Act really works by imposing permits that have emission limits on big facilities like a power plant or a factory. And the question presented in that case, which is called Coalition for Responsible Regulation, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, one of the questions was, does the key permitting program that requires pollution controls at big new polluting facilities give EPA the authority to put limits on greenhouse gases as well as other pollutants? And his reading of the Clean Air Act was no, it does not, notwithstanding the Massachusetts v. EPA decision. So one of the big issues for his confirmation hearing is going to be, would you revisit what even Justice Roberts has suggested now is settled law?
So that means, will you open up the question of whether the federal government, through the Environmental Protection Agency, or any agency for that matter, has a say in regulating greenhouse gas emissions?
That's right. Does the Clean Air Act, is the Clean Air Act a tool for addressing climate change, particularly as we've seen Congress failing to act on climate change year over year?
So is there a kind of like consistent judicial philosophy behind these rulings, or is this more just like, the guy doesn't like regulations?
Well, I think the guy doesn't like regulation particularly might be one frame to see a cohesive pattern.
I didn't have to go to law school for that one.
To frame it in Judge Kavanaugh's terms, he would say that Congress is the most accountable body. And so if you're going to impose regulation that has big effects across the economy, big effects on industry, you want the regulators to be accountable. And so he is leery of putting, giving power to federal agencies. Well, he also is a proponent of Citizens United, and we know that that makes Congress less accountable than it otherwise would be, except to very wealthy corporations. And it's an idea that I think ignores the practicalities of government. So the president, no matter who he is, doesn't have the time, expertise, or wherewithal to figure out the best ways to protect the environment, workers, voting rights. These are questions that go to cost to industry, health standards, et cetera. They're often a complicated set of tasks that require experts, and that's why we have really effective agencies staffed by scientists and economists and so forth. So the idea that you can effectively protect people without agencies isn't reasonable. I think it's a stalking horse for getting back to your original point, for not liking regulation.
I was struck going through his record. There was one case where he upheld an authority of the EPA, and it concerned the EPA's power to oversee an environmental regulation in California that impacted truckers. That seemed like the one decision that went against the current of thinking agency authority should be minimized.
To be fair, Judge Kavanaugh has not been someone who's bucked precedent at every turn. So not all of his decisions are overtly hostile to the environment, and he has recognized EPA authority to do what it wants to do in more than that instance. The way that I see his jurisprudence is playing the long game, and where he's seen an opportunity to invite the Supreme Court to change the law, to restrict the authority of the government to protect the environment, to narrow the ability of people like you and me to go to court, he's often written a dissent that invites a change in the law. But otherwise, as a judge on the D.C. Circuit, where he has felt constrained by precedent, he's often followed precedent.
Well, and also, in talking about the activities of agencies, so agencies don't just set regulations, they enforce regulations. So part of what attacking the ability of the agencies to regulate leads to is the inability of the agencies to be able to enforce actions as well, right? So this is getting at a broader deregulatory agenda that's about taking apart the federal government's ability to control the circumstances within which industry operates in this example.
Right. I think that's right. I mean, I work in a lot of countries, and when you look at the legal system in the U.S., it is incredible, because it not only has really robust environmental laws with protective standards that need to evolve over time as our scientific understanding of harms improves and our technology to address the harms improves. So it's a great system of laws that we put together in the 1970s. And perhaps the best invention of all is recognizing the federal government won't always have the resources or political will to enforce them. So it gives you and me the power of what are called citizen suits to enforce the law when the government won't. So what we see with Judge Kavanaugh's philosophy is both an effort to constrain what the government can do, what you've just been laying out, but also what you and I can do in the courts when the government won't act.
Can you say more about that?
Sure. So the kind of test to get into court and get relief when the government isn't holding polluters accountable, isn't setting health-based standards, for instance, is whether you or I have standing to sue. And that means, are we a stakeholder? Do we have an injury? Can the courts redress it? And the Constitution sets a fairly broad test. Judge Kavanaugh has been putting forward decisions that would really constrain that test and make it much harder to prove that you're appropriately in court. And maybe his most famous opinion relates to tire safety. Public Citizen had 130,000 members who drive the roads who would be at greater risk by standards that were not appropriately protective in terms of whether tires blow out and cause accidents on the road. It's kind of a classic case where it's a risk that's has really obvious consequences. Lots of car accidents every year, a major probability of being in greater danger because of lax standards. And he found that you basically had to prove you'd already been in an accident to be able to challenge the standards that govern your experience on the roads every day. So that's it's outside the mainstream to keep people out of the court when they have a very significant risk that they can point to.
We're speaking to Abby Dillon. She's Vice President of Litigation for Climate and Energy at Earth Justice, based in Oakland, California. Abby, a couple minutes ago, you referred to Judge Kavanaugh as someone who's very bound by precedent. Now, at the circuit level, on the Second Circuit, that's literally your job, is to be bound by the precedents, particularly those set by the Supreme Court, which is above you in the judicial hierarchy. How different is that job once you're on the high court?
It's incredibly different. So I just want to clarify that he's on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
Oh, excuse me.
Not at all. It's important because that has given him an opportunity to weigh in so often on the role of the federal government in regulating. A lot of those cases go to the D.C. Circuit. And so your question is, I think, what would happen if you were on the Supreme Court? And I think he's made it really clear. He has, as I was saying before, taken every opportunity when he's seen a question that he thinks the Supreme Court might take to issue in a dissent. So getting a case before the Supreme Court is difficult, but when a three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit has expressed some disagreement about a juicy question, that's a time where the Supreme Court might reach out and say, you know what, we want to dig into that question. And there have been several times where he has put forward a new interpretation of the law and then, you know, sort of like a nice toss to Justice Scalia, late Justice Scalia, for instance, who took it up and ran with the reasoning that Judge Kavanaugh put forward, often swinging the law very significantly toward the hard right.
So there's been a bunch being written up now about Judge Kavanaugh and predictions for what his nomination could mean on the court. And two issues that seem to come up a lot is concern that he might be more willing to challenge the so-called Chevron doctrine, which I'll ask you to explain because our listeners are probably thinking of the Chevron oil company. It's not that. Challenge the Chevron doctrine. But also, I read one quote that our deference could be gone in 2 years because of this appointment. So can you tell us what we should know about those two legal terms?
Sure. So,
and Judge Kavanaugh's threat to them.
Sure. So let me start sort of with a little teeny quick primer on what we're talking about when we talk about Chevron deference, and then talk a little bit about what I think its larger implications are and what it says about Judge Kavanaugh's mind frame. Chevron deference relates to the reality that we have statutes that are open-ended. You know, the Clean Air Act will say, you know, protect us from the biggest sources of toxic air pollution. But the devil is in the details about how you do that. And so agencies have a lot of leeway to make rules that actually implement the statutory mandates. And over time, the courts have recognized that they're not the best, you know, generalist judges are not the best people to weigh into complex technical questions. And so the idea is, if a statute is super clear on its face, if the Clean Air Act says you have to take health into account when you set this pollution standard for mercury, if the agency says, we interpret that to mean we'll consider health some other time, the courts would say, no, that's a question for us. We can read. We're the judges. And so we will not defer to what the agency is saying here. Chevron says, though, if it's ambiguous, if the Clean Air Act says set appropriate and necessary standards to limit mercury in our air, and EPA says, we interpret that to mean XYZ, at that point, the courts would say, we're going to defer to the agency. And if what they're saying is reasonable, we'll let that rule stand. That's what the idea of Chevron deference says. And our deference is a little flavor of that, which relates to the agency's interpretation of its own rules. Okay. The agency sets a rule and it says, we're the best interpreters of what it means. Judge Kavanaugh's view is that the court should take a much more active role in deciding what agencies are doing and whether they're implementing the will of Congress. And he's very leery of giving agencies discretion to carry out their mission under the statutes. Now, I would say that we eliminate Chevron deference at, well, it's an interesting time for a very conservative set of judges and legislators to be going after Chevron, because in some ways, Chevron's a double-edged sword for people like me who want to protect the environment. Sometimes the statute can be clear, and courts will nevertheless defer to an agency that's deregulating. So the Trump administration could benefit from this deference standard to say, we're the agencies, we know what we're doing, we should roll back all these important protective standards that we got, for instance, during the Obama administration. So,
which was the case during the Bush years,
right.
Like the authority to regulate greenhouse gases. The Bush EPA was maintaining it did not have that authority. It took litigation to establish that it was in the Clean Air Act.
Right, right. So I think the jury is out, if you will, on how Chevron deference's durability over time will affect environmental protection in a very, that said, as we see our judiciary and all these new judicial appointments on the Supreme Court and on the lower courts being packed with judges who are hostile to regulation, losing that layer of deference to expert agencies who are trying to do the right thing is a real issue.
But isn't it also, if you put these approaches together that he's taken on the law, one quote in Business Week, he's a fan of presidential power and not a fan of agency power. He will be sympathetic to arguments that a big part of the administrative state as currently structured is unconstitutional, and that basically his approach is we want to limit the ability of the agencies to regulate, which is sort of where we started, and sort of linking those concepts together, that you want to limit. Well, I'll let you.
Well, I think this is. I think our conversation is
circling back.
is zeroing in on what is a very cohesive worldview that government should be limited most when it is acting to protect the public interest, and there's all sorts of packaging for this idea, but that's what it comes down to. And when you see industry trying to get into court or industry trying to have a say in what the government's doing, Judge Kavanaugh's opinions have been much more accommodating.
I see. Okay.
Going back to the original question, is there a coherent judicial philosophy, or is it the guy just doesn't like regulations? Maybe the guy just doesn't like regulations.
I think we can agree on that.
Abby Dillon, in your capacity as an attorney at Earth Justice, have you been in front of Judge Kavanaugh?
I have not. Many of my colleagues have been. And I should say, Judge Kavanaugh is known for his extremely cordial and respectful behavior in the courtroom. This is not about Judge Kavanaugh as an individual. He's well-liked and well-respected. It's about a very clear and strong worldview that harkens back to, I think, a 1930s era idea of a small government that serves the most wealthy and most powerful interests at the cost of regular people.
When you say 1930s, I think pre-New Deal. What are the prospects of the type of philosophy towards the law that you just described being used to unwind the safety net programs we take for granted.
That's exactly what's happening right now. I mean, what's so amazing to me right now is that we're seeing the Federalist Society essentially engineering Supreme Court picks and judicial nominations and confirmations all down through the federal courts. And their philosophy not only harkens back to the law pre-New Deal, it is the law pre-New Deal. This isn't some sort of analogy that you have to work hard to see. They are trying to revive something called the non-delegation doctrine that is essentially eviscerate the whole administrative enterprise of protecting people and creating safety net programs and just creating essentially workers' rights, civil rights, environmental protection programs. What the Federalist Society, who also handpicked Judge Kavanaugh, is trying to replicate is the law pre-New Deal.
So just to be totally specific, we're talking about an era pre-Social Security, pre-Medicare, pre-Medicaid, before there was a legally sanctioned right for unions to collectively bargain. You think all of that's on the table?
I'm going to stick to what I know, which is the environment.
Sure.
But I think the whole suite of philosophies that are on the table go to a single-minded interest to benefit wealthy corporations.
Abby Dillon, that is a grim note to end on. Thank you for coming in to sound that grim note.
Thank you for having me.